Hi, today's May 20th, 2018. This is Mobius Podcast 255. I'm Todd Ogaswar, my good friend John Westfall. We started off with one topic. John and I were kind of chatting for, I don't know, about 10 minutes now, I guess. And we came up with a bunch of other stuff. So the first one I wanted to mention is something I thought John might find tangentially interesting. I find it very interesting, but unaffordable. And that is an article in The Verge has a kind of a preview of a new Android phone from Red, you know, the people who make the high-end cameras, professional-grade cameras, I should say. And a couple of things interesting about it, probably not the most interesting thing, but the one that catches everybody's eye probably, is $1,200.
Wow.
So, yeah, kind of an expensive phone, but what you get for it is what they call, well, actually, I can't even remember what they call it, but basically it's a holographic, well, again, it's not a hologram, I think, either, because that requires lasers. But they use the term holographic in terms of providing a 3D display that's not a lenticular display, which is what you see on some of the old school 3D cameras, including the one I have, that lets you see a 3D-ish image on a flat screen without lasers or, you know, anything else. Or you know, using goggles or something to split the view. Any rate, as he said, two things. The reviewer was not able to show the front of the device, I guess, as part of kind of a partial non-disclosure. He wasn't able to talk about everything else. So you don't know what the lens looked like. And anyway, you wouldn't be able to see the 3D on a 2D display anyway. So, but yeah, it did say it was pretty impressive. So, you know, as a fan of 3D, I'm kind of curious. I doubt if I'll buy it at $1,200, but maybe if somebody I know buys one, I definitely would like to take a look at it. The other interesting thing is that it has it's modular. And has a module that lets you attach a real camera lens. And by real camera lens, I mean like, you know, from your camera. So if you have an SLR camera with lenses for it, you can get some modules to attach a nice lens to it, which I found kind of interesting.
I kind of like Red and other camera manufacturers getting into the Android space.
Yeah.
You know, we had for a while there the super large megapixels in the Lumias, and that really kind of satiated a number of people who were the photo enthusiasts among us. But yeah, it would be great to have a connected camera device that could also, if you're out and about, be your phone if you wanted it to be. Or I could see photographers that would be their work phone.
Yeah. There was a couple of years ago, and I was almost curious enough to buy it, but never did. There were a couple of Samsung digital cameras that were based on Android. And I wasn't really quite sure what that meant. You know, like, could you load, say, Snapseed, which is a really nice Android app for photo manipulation, onto your camera and directly manipulate the camera? I'm not sure. But I always thought that was kind of interesting, and then it kind of disappeared from view, so.
Yeah, I remember adding them to my Amazon wish list years ago and then finally removing them once they had kind of gone out of production and weren't being updated. But yeah, it was a cool idea.
And the other odd thing, I mean, not even related, but just something I noticed, something else that disappeared from digital cameras is GPS. So there was a time where, you know, you could buy a nice low-end digital camera, by low-end, well, mid-range, I guess, let's say $300, $400, and it had a GPS, but none of them have them anymore. And I looked.
That's actually the reason why I haven't upgraded my point-and-shoot.
Yeah.
I'm still using a Panasonic Lumix from 2010, I think I purchased it, 2009 or 10. And when I'm out and about taking photos, I love having that GPS on just to get the GPS marking on those photos.
Absolutely.
So I don't really know why that's gone away.
Yeah. I know we speculated about this probably a couple of years ago when we first noticed it, but it's still bothering me. So like you, I have an old, I don't think I have a, I mean, I have a Lumix, but I don't have a Lumix with GPS. I have an old Canon with a GPS. And by old, I mean 2013-ish. So it's, you know, 5 years old now or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next is something you are, our perennial search.
Yeah, so we've talked before about Evernote and how we both are Evernote users, but we're a little worried about the service because they sure seem like they're giving off enough signs to be worried.
Yeah.
They don't seem to know how to monetize. They went to this model about a year and a half ago where it went down to if you were on the free plan, just two devices and it just it looks like they're struggling. They killed off all of their products other than Evernote and Sketch on the Mac, and so
which I think was a good idea.
Yeah. So I've just been a little worried, and I've also really hated the idea of so much data just living solely in a cloud.
Right.
And I my Evernote corpus is about 10 gigabytes, so I have a lot sitting. So this week, I happened to be bouncing around a few websites, and I came across an open-source note-taking app called Joplin.
Okay.
And Joplin has been around now long enough that they're in a 1.x release, but they're still very actively under development. The interesting thing is the mobile devices or the mobile apps are a little bit buggy right now, but the desktop app seems to be pretty solid, and there's even a command line app for Linux.
I like that.
And you can bring whatever synchronization you want. So I do. I use my QNAP NAS unit. I basically have a web dev share that I use for syncing. You can also use Dropbox, OneDrive, Nextcloud. But the interesting thing is it does natively support importing the ENEX files that Evernote exports. So last week I actually downloaded a trial version of a piece of software called Backuppery, all one word, for Evernote. That automatically went through all of my notebooks and exported them out as ENEX files, and then I just imported them into Joplin. I did find a little bit of trouble with ENEXs that were larger than 800 megabytes.
Wow, that's
a
big one.
I had a fair number of those.
Really?
Yes. Oh, I have one notebook that was 7 gigabytes. It was kind of my miscellaneous scan, snip, anything notebook.
Yeah, if you do a lot of scanning, I can see that.
I did go through that and export little chunks of it out. So notes starting with A through C and then D through F and all that. So that took a little bit of time. But now I've got everything in Joplin, and I'm hoping that the mobile device sync clears up a little bit. But even if it never does, it's got the important fact of my MacBook. I can search it. I can see the files that are attached to notes. And it's synced up in a server that I control 100%. So,
yeah. So two things. First, because I had to look it up myself, is ENEX is Evernote's XML export format. I didn't know that until I just looked at it. And, you know, hey, prompts to Evernote for providing that service. Not everybody allows you to take your data with you, so to speak. So, you know, got to give them prompts for that. Number two is, I wonder, I'm going to guess that if you have anything encrypted in Evernote, that won't transfer over to Joplin.
Yeah, I've never used the encryption feature, so I'm not sure if Evernote, when you go to export those into ENEX, if it decrypts them, and so then you don't have to worry about it, or if you have to do something different. But it does look like Joplin supports encryption too, end-to-end encryption. So if you want to encrypt your Joplin notes, you can do that once you get everything in there from Evernote.
Nice. And so where did you install Joplin?
It's on my MacBook Pro, and it syncs up through WebDAV to my server. I haven't had a lot of luck with WebDAV and the mobile devices on iOS yet. There seem to be some WebDAV issues on those. And I'm trying to get the command line up and running on a on a Linux server, but I'm having a little bit of trouble with that. But
okay, so your Pro has to be on to synchronize with another device?
No, because the Pro is synchronizing to the QNAP NAS unit.
Oh, okay, okay.
So basically the QNAP becomes the cloud storage for it, and each device downloads their own version of the database.
Okay. So you do need some kind of infrastructure to set this up. It's a replacement for high-end geeks.
Well, you can also use Dropbox or OneNote.
Okay, okay.
So if you don't have your own cloud, you can use other clouds.
All right. And then is your next item related here? Backuppery?
Well, Backuppery is what I use to automatically export all those ENEX files.
Got it.
So I had about 20, 25 notebooks, so I really didn't feel like manually exporting all 25. Right.
And that's where you ran into 800 megabyte notebook problems.
Backuppery is a trial.
Right.
Yeah, it's trial software, but it works for, I think, 7 days or 2 weeks or something like that. So if you're just using it to get your data out of Evernote once, you're good with the trial.
Okay. All right. Next up is something I think I would have been interested in 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Now I'm not so sure. And that's There's some, apparently Bloomberg reported, I saw it in allaboutmicrosoft.com, but or ZDNet. But Bloomberg reported earlier, a couple of days ago actually, that Microsoft is planning to release a Surface tablet priced at $400 in the second half of 2018. And the second half is, you know, only like a month and a half away, so.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the contacts said the low-end Surface device would be priced at $399 without the separately priced keyboard cover. And according to the contact, the device will have an Intel Core M processor with 4 gigs of RAM and 64 gigs of storage. So it's more expensive than an iPad Pro. I mean, the new iPad, which I think is $299. Starts at $299. Something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. Except that has 32 gigs of RAM. So, okay. You do have to go up a bit to get the 128 gigs. But still, I think it's like $350 for the 128 gig or $380. So I think it's still cheaper and you get twice the amount of storage. I don't know. It's just a... It's a hard call, and they don't say, well, it's Intel Core M, presumably runs a full Windows 10 and not yeah. the Windows S or whatever.
That was exactly what I was thinking. That's the make or break point with this. If yeah. it's full Windows, great offering. Yeah. I think it really would extend the Surface line to a number of people who maybe are, this is going to sound ironic because it's never been the case up until the last 10 years, who are casual Windows users. You sort of live on a Mac and in the iOS ecosystem, and you've thought, I'd like to have a Windows machine around from time to time yeah. for whatever purpose. Yeah, yeah it could be something that would be useful for that market and for people who just don't have a tablet at all and are kind of looking to get into it. But if it runs one of those not-so-good versions of Windows that doesn't really yeah. do everything you need to do and doesn't have legacy app support, it's not going to be... It's going to be another Surface RT.
Yeah. Anything less than Windows 10 Home Edition is not acceptable. And that includes Windows S, which is yeah. not acceptable. Or Windows on... it's not ARM. It's Intel-based. But from what I'm hearing, Windows on ARM is not a winner either. It doesn't solve anything.
Yeah, they keep trying, though. Microsoft really thinks that's what we want.
Yeah.
And unlike Apple, Microsoft doesn't have the clout to tell us what we want and force us into it.
Yeah. Well, you know, when the Surface 3, not the Surface Pro 3, but when the Surface Amateur 3 came out mm-hmm. several years ago, I was quite interested in that. But by then, I'd kind of been weaning myself off Windows. I mean, I still use Windows at work every day, you know, because I have to, basically. At home, I kind of boot up my Windows notebook once a month and my Windows desktop every 2 months to update it.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly I'm on an iPad Pro these days at home, yeah. Let me rephrase it. No, let me say that differently. I'm either on an iPad Pro, not mostly, or a Chromebook, Samsung.
Yeah,
Chromebook.
When I'm at home, I'm on a MacBook Pro about maybe 20% of the time I'm using a computer, and the iPad Pro about 80% of the time.
Yeah, so it's interesting, but $400 without a keyboard? You know, Windows just doesn't run well without a keyboard and mouse, in my opinion, or a keyboard and touchpad.
No.
And it's not because, well, not necessarily because of Windows itself, but because the apps for it aren't touch friendly, mm-hmm. generally speaking. So too little too late, in my opinion. And even a price, even at $399, you can actually get a pretty decent low-end Windows 10 Home Edition notebook for $399 these days. You know, a perfectly usable device
yep.
for a non-power user, which is, you know, most people.
Very true.
Yep. Okay. And I got to thank John who found most of the stuff today because I couldn't find.
Well, yeah. Anything. So this next item is interesting because we can talk about some of the struggles that I think are broader than this. But so a piece on The Verge that started with the line, "There's no easy way to charge and listen to music on an Android device without a headphone jack."
Mm.
So we know that Apple killed off the headphone jack in iPhones a couple years ago, but pretty much from day one. On iPhone, you could get adapters that would definitely go from US or from Lightning to 3.5 millimeter. That right. was in the box, still is in the box. But also these little Y-shaped connectors that go from Lightning to Lightning and 3.5 millimeter, so you can charge and listen at the same time. Apparently, on the Android side, so remember Android. device manufacturers for about a year mocked Apple mercilessly for this, and then they all start taking out the headphone jack too.
Yep.
Which, if you ever think that your device manufacturer has your back, it's always amusing to me how one falls and it's big enough, and the others just fall right in line. But anyway, Android, now the situation is a little more perilous because, according to The Verge, there is no really good Y-split sort of adapter. There are a number of them that you can get from overseas and import them in, but the complaint is that some of them are almost unlistenable with a lot of crackle and background noise. But you also just don't know which ones are good and which ones aren't, because the OEMs aren't releasing them or branding them other than Sony. And so it's a crapshoot. Is the $14.99 one going to sound as good as the $19.99 one? Should I go for the $30 one? Are they all made in the same factory and just branded under different names? It's kind of an interesting situation over in Android land.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at Amazon now, source of pretty much everything I buy. And there are a bunch of USB-C earbuds, which is kind of interesting because when I noted to John before we started, I can't find my USB-C headphones that came with my Pixel 2. And so I was kind of in the market for one, for USB-C headphones. And at the time, I looked at it, this was last year, I couldn't find any that were reasonably priced. And by reasonably priced, I mean under $50. They're all like $70 to $150, which I didn't want to pay for. But now there are a couple. But, I have to say, looking at the average cost, I really don't see any that are more than 3 stars. Now that John mentions it.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm looking at, that same very similar search result now. And you've got some people who say, yeah, this works great. And then you've got enough people that say, it's kind of a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And so if you're in the market, your options, I guess, are buy 6 of them and see which one works and then return the other 5. And that doesn't seem all that encouraging.
Right.
But again, it's the same sort of thing that we saw with Amazon a few years ago. Remember, before the crackdown on Lightning, MFI compliant Lightning and all of that, it was kind of a Wild West for iOS. You went out there and sometimes the cable you got was a good cable and other times it was a piece of junk and you thought, well, I'll know better next time. The problem is with the iOS ecosystem, there's always been, looking for the made for iPhone badge. Right. And knowing that it had to go through some sort of testing, presumably, to use that badge, although I'm sure others have slapped that on there without needing to go through the testing. But there's really nothing like that for Android.
Yeah, I'm still looking while you're talking to see if there's anything, and the answer's not really. More than 3 stars, I mean. There's 3.5 stars, but does that really make a difference? Interesting. And the other comment is, I would guess, like most other Android users of devices with USB-C interfaces, since I can't find my headphones, I just use Bluetooth. But honestly, I don't use it that often because I usually use my iPhone for stuff, audio stuff. So, interesting. And John was also, I don't know if John mentioned that some of the complaints were that the USB-C device, audio devices are crackling and things, a lower audio quality, so...
I think it's interesting also, I just looked in my search results and there's a sponsored search result. So you figure if you have a company that has enough money to sponsor your search results on Amazon, you might actually have a better product. But this product is $8.98 and it has 1.5 stars.
Wow.
With 83 reviews.
Wow.
So you can't even go by the sponsored ones. They're the people who have the money, so they probably have better products. No, their stuff
not
apparently.
Not necessarily.
And we did have the conversation beforehand about Golden Ear, the audiophiles out there that just, complain about anything. But it kind of sounds like that's not so much the case here as it's just anyone would notice the problems.
Yeah. And, I'm trying to think of the most expensive pair of headsets I own. And the answer is I don't own any expensive headsets. I think the most expensive earbuds I ever bought were the Apple inline silicone earpiece thing. John's holding up something. What's that, a Beats?
I'm holding up a pair of Beats Solo 3s. This is probably the most expensive headset I've ever bought. But they've worked well for me for the over the year I've had them, so I'm
yeah. Well, anyway, I just don't have any good audio, you know, listening things. I rarely listen to music that requires it. You know, most music I listen to is kind of all mid-rangey stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't need super-duper basses and stuff. I mostly listen to spoken text in the forms of podcasts and audiobooks. So, again, all mid-range, you know, stuff. Doesn't really need high-end headphones. I guess I could say the most expensive headphones I ever bought I don't own because I bought it for my daughter. I bought her the, I don't know what it's called. I think it's a Beats. It's a Bluetooth one, earbud type. But anyway.
Yeah, for me, these, I always wondered what high-end sounded like. And so these were the first ones I bought, these Solo 3s. And the thing I noticed about them most is, they're just real, well, they're not as bassy as the earlier Beats products. They're a little bit more attenuated there. But, A, the Apple W1 wireless chip is just really nice when swapping between all my devices. And that's the same chip that's in the AirPods. So any device I'm at, I can just instantly switch over to. But I actually hear, I do notice parts of music, even in the mid-range, that I don't notice without them. So, you know, instruments that aren't as loud in the mix when you're listening to it from a speaker that's 5 or 6 feet away, you hear when it's, you know, an inch away. So that is something I did start to notice, was little nuances in music that I hadn't been able to hear just because the volume of that instrument didn't matter the range, it's just too low to hear it from a speaker.
Right. Well, and with that said, I'm trying to look up this So I bought these HTO Sync? I don't know. It's called True Bluetooth Headset with Charging Box. So it's wireless earbuds like the AirPods, except that they're only $33. So I've been using them for about a half a year now. Got them late last year. And unfortunately, I have to say, although, you know, there are some good qualities about them, like they're cheap, eh? And B, they've fit really well in my ears. I'm really shocked. They've never fallen out. But unfortunately, they don't really work well. The right earbud keeps drifting in and out. So, you know, and sometimes the whole earbud stops working or maybe working, but, you know, drifts out completely. And so it's really not ideal when you say listening to a novel to lose words all of a sudden. But for $33, it was an interesting purchase, and, you know, let me know that I like the idea of having truly wireless earbuds. I wouldn't recommend these, because basically after a few months, they, you know, it never worked super well, but it's degrading in its quality of operation, so I can't recommend them. But now I think I would be more interested in entertaining the possibility of spending a chunk of cash for something like the AirPods that are presumably more reliable. Have you found them dropping in or out on either ear?
I have not had any real trouble with the AirPods, especially if I'm staying in one place. Now, I have had some weird dropout when I'm walking around and I first pull them out of the case. Oh. So you're kind of mid-stride and you're popping them in your ears, and I think that's just the interference of trying to move around and get connected up. But if I'm just sitting at my desk and just pop them in, I haven't had any trouble with
them. Now, when you're walking around, have you had any problems? That's the only time I use them, is when I'm not sitting.
Only once or twice. I think it just has to do with, you know, what's in my pocket on those days and what pocket I put my phone in. But I've never found something where I can honestly say, oh, every time I put them in this pocket, it always drops out. It just seems to be.
And after me, I've tried my shirt pocket, my left pant pocket, my right pant pocket, holding it up near my head. You know, I've tried a various kind of thing, and it still drops. So not quite sure why, but I thought it was me, you know, blocking the Bluetooth signal. But anyway.
You just soak up all radio signals.
Yeah. Yeah, I have talent like that. You know, I'm like a Faraday person. Okay. So, and we can rant about golden ear people later, but it's not. I'm not a golden ear person, so I don't need perfect fidelity in my headphones. I just need them to be reliable and give me a sound I can be happy with.
You just need headphones.
I just need headphones. Okay, and I should say, you know, I have a bunch of Bluetooth headsets, all low end, you know, all under $50, and the fit in my ear is less than these headphones. I'm not recommending the true wireless earbuds. All of them tend to pop out, you know, which is why I was kind of not really high on the idea of AirPods, which I figured would fall on my ear. But after, like I said, after this experience, one of the good things I learned is you can find well-fitted earbuds. So I'm hoping the AirPods are one of them. Now, are there any adapters or anything for the AirPods? Do they fit better in your ear, or do they just fit in your ear?
The AirPods fit fine, but of course, Apple EarPods fit fine. So, I guess if EarPods work for you, then the AirPods probably work for you.
So the EarPods fall out of my left ear, but not my right.
I think you just have cosmetic surgery on your left ear. To get them to fix it so that, you know,
to fit into the Apple norm.
Yeah, fit into the Apple model. Well, you know, left is the sinister side.
That's right.
So you want it to be more like the right ear anyway.
Okay. And before we sign off on one of our shortest podcasts ever, you have something you wanted to remind people of that I didn't know?
Just wanted to remind people, this is podcast 255 in decimal, but in hex, this is podcast FF, or 111111 in binary. But next time, we're going to be at 256 in decimal, and we'll be at 100 hex and a very large binary number.
Yeah.
10000000.
One followed by 8 zeros.
Yeah,
in binary, and 100 in hex.
Yes.
And so
we'll try to keep it in, I think, decimal, but, you know.
And for the truly geeky, I guess I should note that up until this podcast, we could index this podcast in a single byte.
Yes.
Yes, but we'll have to move to 2 bytes, starting with the next podcast, 256. So, yeah.
These are geeky. So we celebrate usually the regular milestones of, you know, 250, 200, 150, 100, but we should really be celebrating like 256 and 512 and 1024.
Absolutely. Now, you are not available for podcasting next weekend, I think.
I am not. So I will be visiting a friend in northern Illinois.
Oh, that sounds like a long drive.
Only 10 hours.
How many?
I'll be catching up on a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, I guess so. Alrighty then. I will catch you next time. I'll try to figure out if I'm going to have a podcast next week or not. I think I will. It's a 3-day weekend for me, so maybe I can find somebody who has some time to do a podcast with me for podcast hexadecimal 100. or 100, I guess. Alright, John, thank you as always for podcast number 255. Didn't even notice that FF thing. And we will talk to you next time.